and happy Christmas week. Welcome into the Doug Russell Podcast. Glad to have you along with us. It is Christmas week, of course, and we're shuffling the deck on the schedule just a little bit this week. Obviously, this is a late release on Monday night, so there's a couple of reasons for that. We will have a show on Wednesday, and it does not have anything to do with sports, but it has everything to do with Christmas. It has everything to do with life, and it has everything to do with a gift that isn't necessarily what you would call a Christmas gift, but it's a priceless gift nevertheless. I hope you'll join me on Wednesday for the most meaningful episode of this podcast that I've done so far, and I don't know how I'll ever top it, but I hope you join us on Wednesday for it. We'll have a truncated show on Friday as well, so maybe a little bit of a shortened show on Friday, but I wanted to get a lot of things in on today's show. We'll go through tie-breaking scenarios, and I'm also going to give you the opportunity to fast-forward through all of those scenarios because it gets really, really deep into the weeds. I'm not going to lie to you. When you look at the last 2 weeks, there are so many different scenarios that I do have them all mapped out. I will provide that information for you, but I also understand if you want to skip ahead. So I'm just leaving that option for you. Not going to dwell a whole lot on Saturday night's Packers game, but we always do like to start with a highlight montage, so here you go.
Fake to Jones in the flats. They'll get it here. Tonyan's in. Touchdown. 10th of the season to lead all tight ends in the league. Rodgers steps up. Eyes on the end zone. He'll run and get in. Touchdown. They stay perfect on third down, and Rodgers gets his 31st career rushing touchdown. All-time leader for quarterbacks in Packers history. Bridgewater has the ball knocked out of his hand, and it's headed the other way. Kevin King, a disaster for the Panthers. Back to Aaron Jones, untouched left side. He'll get in. Three drives and three touchdowns for Green Bay. 18 seconds. Looking for a miracle. Incomplete, and that's going to do it. Send it for Anderson, who had a very quiet night and kind of a fitting finish there. So the Packers, who clinched a second consecutive division title last week, getting closer to clinching the one seed and home field advantage in the first round bye, and all those good things for Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay.
Play-by-play courtesy of the NFL Network as the Packers beat the Panthers 24-16. Really a tale of two halves in this one. The Packers were fantastic in the first half. They led at the intermission 21-3, and then they were absolutely atrocious in the second half. This was a team that got manhandled on the line of scrimmage. This was a team that was only able to put up a field goal after halftime. This was a team that had five straight possessions with one combined first down, and that included four punts in a row on three and outs. So it wasn't a game that you're going to hang anything on, except for the fact that it was the Packers' 11th victory of the season. Still, after the game, Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers talked about it.
Well, we started off good on third down. We couldn't hit a third down. We didn't, run it as well. Obviously, in the third quarter, we couldn't find a way to get Devontae involved a little bit more, which I think hurt some of our production. And there's a couple of breakdowns in protection. It just, nothing felt good. The energy was a little off, and we obviously had the three and outs. It was definitely a stinker for the offense, the third and fourth quarters. Our defense played well. The play of the game was the fumble. They're going in to make a 14-10. Kev picks it up, and next thing I was 21-3. I'm not a big believer in teams lightening up, losing focus. This comes down to execution, and we didn't execute starting the second half, and that's why they got back in the game. It didn't feel like we got where it would get him involved a whole lot tonight. Now, obviously, they really didn't give him a lot of single coverage, maybe one or two plays the entire game. But we got to keep finding ways to get him the ball because he's just so dynamic. We'll look at all of it. It is frustrating, but we're 11-3. We won the game. That's a good problem to have. We just know that type of football in the second half, not going to get it done in the playoffs. That's where we're going. That's the trajectory that we're on. We're going to at least host a home playoff game. We win these next two, we're going to be the one seed. So we need to play better these next 2 weeks.
Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Here's his head coach, Matt LaFleur.
I don't think anybody on offense is particularly happy, especially with the second half. But, we're happy we won. We're 11-3. And you'd rather come out of this with a win and have stuff to clean up than on the other side of this thing. So you'd feel really crappy then. So it seemed like they had a good beat on what we were trying to get done, and they went out there and performed better than we did in the second half. They caught us in a defense where they thought they were going to take advantage of and pound the football. I think our guys kind of knew what was coming there with the quarterback sneak, and that's just great awareness, and that's why you saw him in there quite a bit. He did a great job punching that sucker out, and that definitely was the play of the game, the turning point of the game. You're talking about a 14-point swing when it could have been easily 14-10.
Packers coach Matt LaFleur. Again, the final score 24-16. The Packers improved to 11-6 on the year. A couple of other scores, don't want to dwell on them too much because we've got a lot to get to. The Chiefs did the Packers a solid by beating the Saints 32-29. Kansas City still has a lot to play for, obviously, this season as well. They want to be the number one seed, just like the Packers want to be the number one seed, but that knocks the Saints what amounts to two games behind the Packers because, of course, the Packers have the number one and most important tiebreaker, and that's head-to-head. Kansas City, by the way, has also now won 11 straight games on the road. Also, in the NFC North, it was the Bears over the Vikings, 33-27. Chicago, 30-plus points in three straight games for the first time in 7 years. Important because that's who the Packers will play in Week 17. And that's important because we'll get into the tiebreakers in just a minute. But just for a second, the layman's, I guess, way of looking at the tiebreaker scenarios for the top seed in the NFC, don't necessarily put too much into the Tennessee game this weekend. It's all about that Bears game. And maybe it'll be moot, dependent upon what the Saints and or Seahawks and or Rams wind up doing this upcoming weekend. But as it stands right now, a win against Tennessee would be great, but not nearly as important as a win in Week 17 against the Bears, who are, again, playing much better football. Congratulations to the Bills. They clinched the AFC East for the first time since 1995. Buffalo now 11-3 on the season. They clobbered Denver on the road 48-19. Seattle wins at Washington 20-15. The Seahawks now 10-4. Football team is now 6-8, the Washington football team. The Browns have won 10 straight for the first time since 2007. They beat up on the Giants 20-6. The Patriots will miss the first or the playoffs for the first time since 2008. They lose at Miami to the Dolphins 22-12. It was the Ravens over the Jaguars 40-14. Jacksonville now in the driver's seat for the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. So congratulations to them for being the worst in the NFL. That's because the Jets won. They beat the Rams 23-20, inexplicably. That's the Jets' first win in almost a full calendar year. Also, the Falcons were up 17-0 on the Buccaneers at halftime. Is Atlanta just cursed? They wind up losing 31-27, again to Tom Brady, this time with the Buccaneers. Brady now 7-0 against Atlanta. That does include the playoffs. Also, the Cardinals, they keep their playoff hopes alive. They beat the Eagles in Arizona 33-26. Arizona finishes 4-0 against the NFC East this season. But again, it's the NFC East. All right, so here's the part in the show where I warn you, and I'll put this in the description, that if you want to skip ahead past all of this really inside baseball, or I guess in this case, inside football stuff, I get it. I understand. Because over the next couple of minutes, we're going to get really deep into the weeds here. So this is your fair warning. And I'm going to tell you right now, again, if you want to skip ahead to where we pick up and talk about what's important and what's not important for the Packers, I fully understand. I get it. Here's your opportunity now. All right, you still with me? Great. Okay, I admit this is going to be really, really granular. And if you stay with me, God bless you. But if you're interested in the Packers being the number one seed in the NFC playoffs, here's how this is going to happen. As it stands right now, of course, they're the number one seed, 11-3. They've got a game lead over the Saints and the Seahawks. The Saints are the number two seed, followed by the Seahawks, then Washington football team, then the Rams, then the Buccaneers, then the Cardinals. So it would be in the first round, for example, Saints-Cardinals, Seahawks-Buccaneers, Washington versus L.A. In the AFC, for what it's worth, the Chiefs are the number one seed. They'd be the first round bye, followed by the Steelers, Bills, Titans, Browns, Colts, and Dolphins. So that's the AFC, if you care about the AFC. Every Monday, maybe some of you know, I joined my former WTMJ colleague from many years ago, Phil Cianciola. He does a Pack Yak podcast, and we got this question today.
I have a MP3 was sent to me by a listener last second here, just as we were starting to record the show. So let me, I've backdoored it through my phone here. Let me play it direct for us, Doug, here. Here we go.
Hey, Phil and Doug, Brian in the Grove checking in with a couple of questions for you this morning. First is a technical question. Just wanted to see if you guys have a feel for tiebreak scenarios in the event that the Packers stumble in one of these last two games. Obviously, we'd love for them to control their own destiny, but I just wanted to see if you had tiebreak scenarios with Tampa Bay, LA, and Seattle if we did lose one of the last two, or possibly two for that matter. Second is an opinion question. Just want to see how you guys feel about that first round bye. We've seen a number of teams in the last couple years make a deep run from that wild card spot, not breaking momentum and rhythm. We've also seen a number of teams with the bye stumble in their first round game when they do come back. Obviously, it's great for health and injuries, but I just want to see what you guys think about the Packers and how they would fare with a week off.
Okay.
Great job, guys. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. So long.
You gotta love it, Doug, when somebody puts their own sound effects in the background. That's
quality.
That's
production value.
That's an A for effort right there. Let's start with the just real quick. Let's start with the bye week because that one I got an opinion on. I'm not a fan, Doug. We haven't talked about this before, but I know everybody makes a big deal out of this bye week. If you're a rather healthy team, a basically healthy team that's been playing consistent football, I don't like it because it changes all the routine, and unless you really need to heal up and need that rest, I don't know. I'm not convinced, actually, that having a bye week is a good thing.
I'm on the fence with it because if you look at, again, we're going to recent Packers history, right? And the recent Packers history, I mean, relatively recent, it was a decade ago, believe it or not, but a decade ago, the Packers wound up, you know, just barely as the number six seed getting into the playoffs. Now, the playoffs format obviously is different this season. They were only 10-6. They needed to win, and at one point they were 8-6, and they needed to win the last two games of their regular season, which were, in effect, playoff games. And they only snuck in because of a tiebreaker as that last seed. And then, you know, they had to go on the road in successive weeks to, and this wasn't in order, but they had to beat the number 1, 2, and 3 seeds on the road. First at Philadelphia, and they wound up beating the Eagles. Then they go to Atlanta and just blew the doors off of the then number 1 seed Atlanta Falcons, just completely annihilated them. And then there was a thought that maybe they were going to wind up in Seattle, but instead they had to go to Chicago. But if they had to you know, travel to Seattle for that game, you know, the Seahawks were a sub 500 team that just because of kind of like what the NFC East is this year, a quirk in the way that that division went, they would have been a sub 500 team as the home team because, again, the Packers were the number six seed in the playoffs. Instead, they wind up going to Chicago and beating the Bears. So the 1, 2, and 3 seeds, again, not in that order, all on the road before going to the Super Bowl and being the underdogs against the Steelers in Dallas and winning that. That's what we know. We also know that 2011, the Packers were 15-1. They had that first round bye, and then they got beat in the first round. Well, their first game, the divisional round of the playoffs, second round of the playoffs, but their first game, they got beaten by the Giants, who wound up going to the Super Bowl and beating the Patriots that season. So that's what we know, and I think that we've got maybe a recency bias in this. But the fact of the matter remains is if you got that first round bye, and there's only one of them this year in the NFC and there's one in the AFC, you only have two games to play before you're at the Super Bowl. And I think it's important. I think that if you can get it, you should get it. And especially this year when there's only one bye instead of the usual two, you know, I'm always going to go for it. And if there's a chance to get it, I think it's a good thing. Okay, so I was kind of hemming and hawing there for a little while because that's not something that you can, and I don't think anybody can, just recite that off the top of their heads. It needs some research, and here's the research that I've found. Here are the current NFC tiebreakers. Again, you're looking at the Packers, 11-3, Saints and Seahawks, both 10-4, the Washington football team, 6-8, the Rams, 9-5, the Buccaneers, 9-5, the Cardinals, 8-6. New Orleans is ahead of Seattle based on conference record. New Orleans is 8-2 in the conference. Seattle is 7-3. The Rams are ahead of the Buccaneers based on head-to-head. The Rams beat the Buccaneers. Detroit and Dallas are ahead of San Francisco based on conference record. In the NFC, the Lions and Cowboys are 4-6. The 49ers are 3-7. Detroit is ahead of Dallas based on common games record. Detroit is 3-1 in common games against common opponents to the Cowboys. Dallas is 2-3. Dallas is ahead of New York in the NFC East based on head-to-head. Dallas beat New York. They still have a game to play. Dallas is ahead of San Francisco based on head-to-head. They will not play, but Dallas beat San Francisco. San Francisco is ahead of New York based on head-to-head. The 49ers beat the Giants. Atlanta is ahead of Carolina in the NFC South based on common games record. In common games, Atlanta's record is 3-7. Carolina's is 2-8. Okay. Seattle and Los Angeles go head-to-head next week. So either the Seahawks or Rams are going to knock one of those, you know, they'll knock each other out, one of them. Either if Seattle wins, they knock the Rams out. If the Rams win, they knock Seattle out of contention for the top seed next week. They don't have any head-to-head. Seattle and the Packers. By the way, Seattle has San Francisco after they play Los Angeles. So the most obvious tiebreaker doesn't apply to the Packers. Seattle is 2-2 in the NFC West. The Packers are 4-1 in the NFC North. That's the second tiebreaker. What's your division record? Right now, the Packers have the better division record. Seattle is 4-0 versus common opponents with San Francisco still to come. The Packers are 4-1 versus common opponents of the Seahawks. You don't get to an advantage for the Seahawks yet until you get to strength of victory. But again, it's either going to be Seattle or Los Angeles. As for the Rams, after Seattle, they've got Arizona. Like the Seahawks, the Rams and Packers do not have any head-to-head, so throw that out the window. That's always the easy one, right? If the Packers and the Saints have the same record at the end of the season because of head-to-head, you know that the Packers beat the Saints back in week three. So that's easy. Again, then it gets more granular. That's why I've invited so many of you to skip ahead, and so many who are otherwise listening to this podcast probably aren't right now. And I get it. I understand. As far as division records, the Rams are 2-2 in the NFC West. The Packers are 4-1 in the NFC North. Then we go to common opponents. The Rams are 3-1 versus common opponents. The Packers are 4-1 with Chicago still to come versus common opponents. Strength of victory, that's next. That's too early to tell at this point. That's a toss-up, and that'll shake itself out over the next couple of weeks. So it'll either be Seattle or Los Angeles. One will emerge. One obviously will not. As for the tiebreakers with New Orleans, what would have to happen is the Packers, all they have to do is win one of their next two games, or New Orleans has to lose one of their next two games, and the Packers would have the tiebreaker and the advantage over New Orleans, obviously because of the head-to-head. What all does this mean? All right, here's where we're inviting everybody back in. Hi, welcome back in. If you missed the last few minutes, that's okay. I understand. If you really want to get granular, if you really want to, and you'll have to write it all down and impress your friends at your virtual meetups this week, I invite you to go back and listen to it. But again, it gets a little silly when it comes to the NFC type or the NFL's tie-breaking procedures. Here's what this means, though, for the Packers. Their game against the Titans this weekend is not meaningless, but it is far less meaningful than their game in Week 17 against the Bears. So if the Packers lose against Tennessee on Sunday night, they'll be okay as long as they beat the Bears. If the Packers beat the Bears, they're the top seed. That's it. End of story. Now, if they lose against Tennessee and lose against the Bears, things could get a little hairy depending upon what New Orleans, Seattle, and L.A. wind up doing. But I think the Packers right now are in pretty good shape. But that game against the Bears is important. As for the game on Saturday, the offense was putrid in the second half. At one point, again, the Packers had this stretch of five possessions in which they had four straight three and outs and one first down total. And another item that you could call a yeah, but the Packers won. Yeah, but the Packers have only played three teams this season that are 500 or better, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, and Indianapolis, and they lost to two of them, beating only the Saints. Now, that may be the most important victory of all of those when all is said and done, and it probably will be, but things aren't going to get a lot easier from here on out. And while getting that top seed is all well and good, the Packers have a history of beating bad teams, but folding up like a cheap suit against the good ones. You look at San Francisco last year, they got pummeled twice, including in the NFC Championship game. As long as we're talking about recent history in the NFC Championship game, they were the hottest team, the Packers were, in 2016 until they got into Atlanta. And they were boat raced by the Falcons. I think the Packers may have just run out of gas. But then, you know, why didn't they run out of gas 10 years ago in 2010 when they had to win the last two games of the regular season and then go on the road at Philadelphia, then at Atlanta, then at Chicago to get to the Super Bowl where they were the underdogs against the Steelers and wound up winning Super Bowl 45. So I've thought about that over the last couple of years. How much did the Packers run out of gas, or just how much, I don't know if they were exposed or maybe they were just playing over their heads for 5 weeks or so. That was the famous Aaron Rodgers, we're going to run the table season. And then in Seattle in 2014, I mean, I know Packers fans will always remember that as one of the most painful losses in Packers history. But at the beginning of that game, the Packers weren't supposed to win it. The Packers weren't supposed to have a two touchdowns lead with 5 minutes left to play. And then they legitimately and literally stopped playing football. When Morgan Burnett laid down at midfield after intercepting Russell Wilson, that was symbolic of how the whole team operated that day. The last 5 minutes, you know what? We're dead. We're just going to run out the clock. We're just going to put a knee on it and run out the clock. You can't do that. That was playing to not lose, and the Packers wound up losing. So, again, here's the moral of the story for Packers fans. Sunday night's game against Tennessee, is it important? Yeah, he said with a question mark. But if the Packers lose it, and the Saints win, and the Seahawks win, that game against the Bears in Week 17, that's a critical game for Green Bay. That's the one that you need to circle your calendar. I mean, it's Packers-Bears week. Everybody circles their calendars anyway. But that's the most important game of the two, by far. It's not even close. The Wisconsin Badgers are headed to the Duke's Mayo Bowl. Two things that I didn't realize existed. I didn't realize there was a mayonnaise bowl, and I had never heard of Duke's Mayo before, but that's where they will take on Wake Forest in Charlotte, North Carolina. Head coach Paul Christ earlier today on 1310 WIBA radio in Madison.
We're also excited, and obviously it was a good way to finish kind of the, I was going to say regular season, but it was anything but a regular season, but it was a good finish Saturday. And, you know, going into this season, you know, our guys wanted to be able to have the opportunity to play football, and then when you can get one more opportunity to play, you're always appreciative of that. It's nice. Last week, players finished finals, so you know, we've kind of got just the bowl we can focus on, and then after the bowl, they'll still be able to get home and be back home for about 3 weeks. So it ends up being a pretty good schedule for us, and looking forward to making the most out of this last opportunity. You know, they've played some good football, and you know, I know a couple of their losses against, you know, really good football teams, and they've been explosive offensively and defensively, do a number of different things. So it's a team that, you know, we've got a little bit of time to get ready for, and we're going to need to get ready for them and get our guys, you know, healthy as they can be. It is, and just had a chance yesterday that once we found out and kind of going through what is the plan going to be and scheduling, had a chance to throw them on. So looking forward to these next couple of days of really spending time to get to know this, more about this team.
Right, but Wake Forest is a 10th place team in the ACC. I had to keep scrolling down. I mean, obviously you've got Notre Dame and Clemson. They're in the college football playoff, and then Miami had a good season, and North Carolina and NC State and Boston College. Are we going to get there anytime soon? Pitt, Virginia Tech, Virginia. Oh, there's Wake Forest, 10th place. If you look at Wake Forest's schedule, they lost their first two games. I mean, they lost against Clemson, but everybody loses to Clemson. They lost to NC State, who had a decent year. Then they ripped off four straight wins. Now, one of them was against Campbell, so I don't know if that really counts. But they beat Virginia and Virginia Tech in successive weeks. They beat Syracuse on the road. They lost in a shootout at North Carolina. Had a couple of games canceled because of COVID, including this past weekend's game against Florida State. And then they lost to Louisville. So they've lost two in a row after winning four straight. I mean, they're okay. They're not a great team. They're led by Sam Hartman, a quarterback. But again, you know, Sam Hartman, 10 touchdowns, one interception, completion percentage of 58.9% through for just under 2,000 yards this season. So he's not going to beat you. They do have a good two-headed running back, though. Kenneth Walker, the third, scoring 13 touchdowns this season. And Christian Beal-Smith, he is the leading rusher in terms of yardage, but they share the rock. I mean, 121 carries to 119 carries. Beal-Smith, 650 yards. Walker, 579 yards, but Walker's the one with the nose for the end zone. Jaquari Robinson, he's your leading receiver, but caught 54 balls this past year for 795 yards and five touchdowns. So the Badgers certainly will want to get some tape on him as well. This is a game, though, that could hinge on turnovers more than most. Wake Forest, their defense, they've got 12 interceptions on the season. That's tied for Kentucky with the top mark in the country. Wake's three pick sixes are tied with four other teams for number one in the country as well. And nine different players have an interception this season. Through eight games, Wake Forest has turned the ball over themselves only three times this year. The Demon Deacons also the only FBS school who's played more than five games to throw one or no interceptions this season. And that exhausts everything that I know about Wake Forest. So they seem to be a decent team with some decent players. Fundamentally sound, maybe not as pound for pound better than the Badgers, but it seems like they play really smart football, and I'm looking forward to it. It is next week, Wednesday, at 11 a.m. at Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, so it's a weekday morning when the game begins, so I'm sure that everybody will be waited with bated breath for the Mayonnaise Bowl, but there are some of these bowl games that we make fun of. We make fun of the, you know, it used to be known as the Belk Bowl. Now it's the Mayonnaise Bowl. The Gasparilla Bowl, which is still a thing. The Pool and Weed Eater Bowl from years past. But what these bowl games do is they provide an opportunity for the kids to keep playing. They provide an opportunity for, you know, an extra couple of weeks of practices, which I think are important for the development of such young teams like Wisconsin. I mean, the Badgers, they've got to be one of the youngest teams that was expected to do something this year, but because of COVID, because of injuries, they had a lot of their skill position players that you were otherwise counting on this season that were unable to play. You look at the wide receiving core, and I think that, you know, you throw a kid in that's a true freshman like Chimere Dike. I think he's going to have a marvelous career at Wisconsin, but, you know, he's just getting his feet wet in Big Ten play. And he comes from the Classic Eight. He went to Waukesha North. So he's played against really good players before. Classic Eight, the best conference in the state of Wisconsin. But again, you're then going to the Big Ten. There's a big difference between the Classic Eight and the Big Ten. And Graham Mertz, this was his first year as a starting quarterback. That first game against Illinois was fantastic. And then, yeah, he regressed. And he got COVID and regressed. And I think that this year he's going to look back on, you know, there are still some things that he needs to work on, maybe some footwork issues that he needs to get better at, but the coaching staff believes in him. He's got a rocket for an arm. He just has to harness what he has and let the game slow down a little bit. But he's a freshman. I'm not going to sweat it. Jalen Berger, again, a freshman. I'm not going to sweat it from him either. So everybody just got to relax about this season from the Badgers that did go a little bit haywire at times. But I'm glad that they're going to a bowl game, whether it's the Mayo Bowl. I mean, I think I said it a couple of weeks ago. It didn't matter if it was the Boca Raton Bowl or the Bahamas Bowl or the Gasparilla Bowl or whatever bowl it was. Turns out it's the Mayonnaise Bowl. I don't care. They get to play another game. They get to develop a little bit further, and hopefully they'll at least get a good memory out of it. As far as the college football playoff, some real controversy. You knew that Alabama was going to get in, obviously. You knew that Clemson was going to get in, obviously. You figured that Ohio State probably was going to get in, but then it was Notre Dame versus Texas A&M. And I cannot tell you that Notre Dame is a better team than Texas A&M because Notre Dame got clobbered by Clemson in the ACC championship game just this past weekend. And the only loss that A&M has this year is against Alabama. Now, they got creamed at Alabama, but that was back in week two. Texas A&M, after getting beaten by the best team in the country, and soundly, all they did was win. All they did was rip off victory after victory after victory. Is this an inherent flaw with the college football playoff? Yeah, but we've known about it. We've known that, look, at some point you're going to have to cut it off. They used to cut it off at 3. Now they cut it off at 5. I think they should cut it off at 9. I think the next 4 teams should be in as well. I think Texas A&M deserves a spot. Cincinnati deserves a spot. How is Cincinnati not in? Oh, because they're not a Power 5. Oh, okay. Is that how that works? You could throw Indiana in as well. Indiana probably deserves a spot in the college football playoff, but they need to expand it a little bit. But Texas A&M, and whether it was Texas A&M or Notre Dame, one was going to be hosed. Because if you're Notre Dame and you're on the outside looking in, you're looking at Texas A&M saying, well, wait, our loss was better than theirs. They got boat raced by 30. At least our game was within 20 against Clemson, but it was more recent. So I think that Texas A&M, if it's me, if I had a vote, and obviously I don't, my vote would have gone to Texas A&M, honestly. Instead, they're headed to the Orange Bowl to take on North Carolina. The rest of the New Year's Six looks like the Fiesta Bowl will be Oregon versus Iowa State. The Peach Bowl in Atlanta will be Cincinnati against Georgia. The Cotton Bowl will be Oklahoma versus Florida. Oh, by the way, the Rose Bowl is in Arlington, Texas this year because of COVID. So the strange year continues. A couple of the other games, look, there's going to be some good ones. The Outback Bowl, Ole Miss versus Indiana, that could be a good game. The Citrus Bowl, Auburn versus Northwestern, that could be a good game. Iowa versus Missouri in the Music City Bowl, that'll be a good game. The Alamo Bowl has Texas against Colorado, that could be a decent game. But here are the bowl games that were canceled. There were 16 bowl games that were canceled this year. So the Bahamas, Birmingham, Celebration, Fenway, Frisco, Guaranteed Rate, Hawaii, Holiday, Independence, LA, Las Vegas, Military, Pinstripe, Quick Lane, Red Box, and Sun Bowls, all canceled. 16 bowl games canceled this year. There were also 22 teams that opted out. Here are the teams that opted out. Boise State, Boston College, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Kansas State, Louisville, LSU with their, I'm using air quotes here, self-imposed bowl ban. And they were having a terrible year anyway, but thanks, defending champion LSU. Also opting out, Maryland, Michigan State, Minnesota, Nebraska, Penn State, Pittsburgh, San Diego State, Stanford, UCLA, USC, Utah, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Washington, and Washington State. I don't blame any of these schools for opting out. It's been a tough year on everybody. And these players, because of the COVID protocols that college football has put in place, they've been sequestered from their friends and family for like 3 or 4 months now. And if there's not a New Year's Six bowl game to play for, I get it. I don't love it. I'd like to see more football. I will always advocate for more sports than less, but I get it. I understand. If you're USC, you went 5-1 this season. You lost in the Pac-12 championship game, and if you weren't going to go to a New Year's Six game, I don't think that they were going to be in the playoff, but if you could have gone to the Cotton Bowl, or if you could have gone to the Fiesta Bowl or the Orange Bowl, yeah, you probably go. But if you're not going to a New Year's Six bowl game because of the way that they lost against Oregon, just stay home. There's been an outbreak on the USC campus that's paused everything other than football, so they just decided to end the football season, along with the basketball season and volleyball and all the other winter sports that aren't going on right now. Moving along. I teased this a couple of weeks ago, and I have since filled out and sent in my 2021 Miller Park Walk of Fame ballot. Now, these, when you go to the ballpark, and, you know, it'll be American Family Field coming up this year, so that's going to change at the turn of the new year. But when you walk around the stadium, you see the huge home plates, and you see the plaques that are in the sidewalk. You know, Hank Aaron has one, Raleigh Fingers, Paul Molitor, Robin Yount. They've also got the statues. We're not talking about the statues. We're not talking about the Wall of Fame, where you go into the team shop and what used to be known as Friday's Front Row Grill. It's not there. We're talking about these huge home plates in the sidewalk, and I get to vote for that. It's really that and, like, president are the only two things that I can vote for. But I'm grateful that they keep sending me a ballot, and mine has been sent in, so there's no turning back. I was hemming and hawing on a couple of these, but, you know, Harry Dalton has a Walk of Fame plaque. So does Jim Gantner, Gorman Thomas, Harvey Keene. By the way, condolences to the Keene family. Audrey Keene passed away earlier today, Harvey's widow. So I guess they're having a pop at whatever Heaven's version of Caesar's Inn is right now. So condolences to the Keene family. But Harvey Keene has a plaque on the Miller Park Walk of Fame. Teddy Higuera, Lou Burdett, Johnny Logan. So they have some Braves players in there as well. All right. Again, my ballot has been sent in. There's no going back. There's no talking me in or out of anything else. This is my ballot. These are the players, former players, and front office people that I voted for. I voted for George Bamberger. Maybe the second best manager in Brewers history. I voted for Craig Counsell, the best Brewers manager in history, taking the team to three straight postseason appearances, squeezing the most out of everything that he's got. Yeah, I voted for Craig Counsell for the Miller Park Walk of Fame, more as a manager than an infielder, but he's listed as an infielder. For me, he's the manager. That's why I voted for him. I voted for Ben Ogilvie. A lot of Brewers fans don't remember how good he was and how much power he had because he was overshadowed by guys like Paul Molitor, Robin Yount, and Gorman Thomas. Ben Ogilvie was spectacular. He was a great left fielder. He was a great left-handed power bat. So important to this team for so many years. Played, what, 8, 9 seasons? I voted for Ted Simmons. I voted for Ted Simmons because he's in the Hall of Fame. He's in Cooperstown. He should have a plaque on the Miller Park Walk of Fame. And if you were with us a couple of weeks ago, when I replayed my interview with Ted Simmons from a year ago, when he got elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame, I told the story that Jerry Augustine told me about how the Brewers were playing like garbage in 1982, wound up getting Buck Rogers fired at midseason, or before midseason in early June. And then the guy who put this team back together, really, was Ted Simmons. He was the glue guy. Not only was he a great catcher, not only was he a great hitter, and a switch hitter at that, he was the ultimate veteran glue guy that kind of held everything together for the team. So absolutely, I voted for Ted Simmons for the Miller Park Walk of Fame. I also voted for Pete Vukovich. The Brewers have only had 2 Cy Young Award winners. One of them already has his plaque, and that's Raleigh Fingers. And he got his back in 2001. Now, Raleigh Fingers is a Hall of Famer. Pete Vukovich isn't. But Pete Vukovich won the 1982 Cy Young Award, and I think that deserves to be rewarded. Speaking of deserves to be rewarded, and someone who's been completely overlooked, is Fred Haney. Who's Fred Haney, Doug? Fred Haney is the only manager to ever manage the city of Milwaukee to a World Series championship, the 1957 Milwaukee Braves. He was their manager. He was also their manager in 1958 when they lost the World Series to the Yankees in 7 games. He was also their manager in 1959 when the Braves and the Dodgers were tied at the end of the season. Now the Braves and Dodgers then went to a 3-game playoff. The Dodgers won it. So the Braves could have gone to 3 straight World Series, and the manager for those 3 teams was Fred Haney, who's been completely overlooked by baseball fans of this era. And they also have a place where non-uniform personnel can be written in, and I do this every year, and I will continue to do this every year until Doug Melvin takes his rightful place on the Miller Park Walk of Fame. I wrote in Doug Melvin. Those are my votes. They cannot be changed. They have been tabulated. I don't know how anybody else voted. But again, George Bamberger, Craig Counsell, Ben Ogilvie, Ted Simmons, Pete Vukovich, Fred Haney, and Doug Melvin. Those individuals get my vote this year for the Miller Park Walk of Fame. And finally today, rest in peace, Kevin Green. Most football fans know Kevin Green as one of the fiercest pass rushers in NFL history. I got to know Kevin Green as one of the linebackers coaches for the Packers. Got a Super Bowl ring with the Packers from Super Bowl 45. And he retired from coaching about 5 years ago. And since then was just kind of leading a quiet life, but was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. Kevin Green passing away today. That's according to his family. No cause of death was given. David Baker, who's the Pro Football Hall of Fame president and CEO, said in a statement, quote, The entire Pro Football Hall of Fame family mourns the passing of Kevin Green. I regarded him as a personal friend and a true Hall of Famer in every sense. He possessed the most incredible can-do attitude of anyone I ever met. He was a great player, but more than that, he was a great man. End quote. I loved Kevin Green. I thought that he brought a fierceness to the Packers that they needed. I thought that he brought a fire that that Super Bowl team desperately had to have. He was fun to be around. He knew the game, and he was trying to learn to become a coach. And after 5 years of doing it, he was like, okay, I got that out of my system. And, you know, not all great players make great coaches, but I think that Kevin Green did. I thought that he really excelled at it, and I was really sad to see him leave the Packers coaching staff because, again, the Packers coaching staff under Dom Capers, I wouldn't necessarily call them the most fiery group of individuals I've ever come across, except for this one guy. And he fiercely loved his players and defended his players. Rob Domofsky tells a great story about Frank Zombo. Remember him? Rob wrote something back when he was with the Green Bay Press Gazette that was, I don't know, less than flattering, I guess you could say, about Frank Zombo. And Kevin Green didn't just take Rob Domofsky to the cleaners or anything like that. He didn't just yell at him about how could you write this about my guy. He took him into the film room. Reporters, by the way, we're not allowed in the film room unless the coach tells you to come with him into the film room. And Rob did. You know, you don't ever decline that opportunity. And Rob tells the great story of how Kevin Green made Rob watch film of Frank Zombo doing, you know, this, that, just the little things that linebackers need to do. So he fiercely defended his players and might have fractured a rule or two doing it, but I'm glad he did. He's going to be missed. And by the way, when Kevin Green retired, NFL Films put together like a little vignette of the career of Kevin Green narrated by the late Steve Sable.
Few people have had more fun playing pro football than Kevin Green did from 1985 through 1999.
Rock and roll! Kids grow up knee high to a grasshopper dreaming about playing in a game like today. Freezing, frozen tundra of Lambeau Field! Where else would you want to be?
They say, hey, this guy, he just loves to play. And he's a nutcake, and he's a Fruit Loop, and he freaks out, and he loves to play.
There was never a doubt in anybody's mind, I think, as long as Kevin played, he played the game the way it's supposed to be played.
In Carolina and Pittsburgh, Green was the prototype outside linebacker in Dom Capers' 3-4 defense. He mastered this complex system by applying a basic principle.
Football is a simple, simple sport. It's a one-on-one matchup. Either you're kicking someone's butt or you're getting your butt kicked.
Damn, I gotta beat this guy.
We had this one particular call where we rush he and Greg Lloyd off the edge, and we call it tight dog rush one.
Dog rush one, man. Peel on the flare.
Bring us off the corner.
I got you. Dog rush.
Green's 160 career sacks ranks third all time. His ability to motivate was second to none.
Let's get off the ball. Let's go. Put your ass in the backfield. If you ain't selling your ass out, take your ass on in. You guys got to hold your own back there.
After retiring, Green stayed close to the game as a coaching intern.
You look like you're ready to play, man.
I wish. 46. Believe me, I wish I could suit it up. Yeah. I love the game.
So you working with Harrison these days?
A little bit, yeah.
Beautiful.
Him and Lamar Woodley a little bit.
Green did 6 internships before finally seeking a full-time position in 2009. The first phone call went to his former mentor.
I said, Coach Dom, I don't want anything. I just want an opportunity to sit down and talk to you about the job. And he asked, he goes, are you ready? Was his words, are you ready?
I guess Kevin thought they were going to hire him like, you know, right on the spot after the interview. And he had called me up and was like, DP, I haven't heard anything. You think I'm going to get the job? I'm like, well, Kevin, I'm sure they're going to talk to some other coaches.
Green got the job and felt right at home in Green Bay.
We walk out to Lambeau Field for the first time together, and he said, DP, smell that grass. He said, isn't that a great feeling?
I think probably being away from it for 10 years makes you appreciate it that much more, too.
tell you what, I'm having the time of my life right now. I know that.
Yeah.
So, this is awesome.
We're going to get after it today.
Dog Rush One, Coach Dom.
Yeah.
Great stuff from the late Steve Sabol. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. You can always find us on our socials. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Doug Russell Pod. You can email the show, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Also, you can search for us on both YouTube and Facebook. And for all of our episodes and all of our social medias and the email address, all of our videos, everything that we do on this show, very simple, one-stop shopping. You can just find us at DougRussellPod.com. Again, a special show coming up on Wednesday. I hope you stick around for it on this Christmas week. I think it's a fitting Christmas type of show. We'll have a short, truncated show coming up on Friday. We will get you set for the Packers game coming up on Sunday as well. But after all, Friday is Christmas. So, again, we'll shuffle the deck a little bit this week, as I think just about everybody around the country is as well. Thanks for joining us today here on the show. And again, Wednesday's show is special and it's meaningful, and I hope you join me for it as well. And again, it doesn't have anything to do with sports, but that's kind of the rules of what we said when we began this project a few months ago. Anyway, enjoy your Monday, enjoy your Tuesday, whenever you download this and listen to it. I hope everybody has a great Christmas week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.